they knew what was going on outside. The word was getting into them that, you know, the trucks had lined up. It was going to be a bust. It was obvious when I went in that there were going to be arrests. And the police apparently were visible. I feel very stupid. When I came in, somebody said, "What's out there? What's out there?" And I said, "Well, there's going to be a bust because there's a couple of trucks." But I said, "Frankly, I don't see any cops." Well, I must have been blind. I don't know where they were. But when I came in, I did not see the police. But there were hundreds of them later on when they charged. They must have been there somewhere. But I just never saw them. Maybe they were around the front of the union. I don't know.
Okay, now, do you think Pelleson should have appeared?
Well, I simply don't think. Everything I've been telling you so far is factual.
Yeah.
I'm trying to convey maybe emotional climates, but when it comes to policy decisions, I'm not second-guessing anybody.
Okay.
I will say, though, that again, to stick to the facts, that certainly Millett and those guys who were in there 11 claimed that the crowd was out of hand, that they were unable to speak to the crowd, that the crowd was not willing to accept anything that they wanted to say. Now, I think a very important point, and I want to read into the record at this point, is what I heard from one kid. It's amusing to, do I want to read in the record? This isn't important, Diana, but I want it on my tape. The impression of Dean Millett's speech that was received, at least by the student who repeated what Dean Millett had said, this was done at 4 a.m., so I got a paraphrase of what Dean Millett had told the crowd at 4 a.m. from a student, was that, somebody asked him, "Why don't you do something about these rooms and this money?" I don't know if the money was mentioned, but they're running rooms anyway, tonight. Dean Millett answered, "Well, I'm sure we can work it out, but nothing can be done tonight. You know, if you'll all go home, I'm sure we can work it out in the morning." Somebody said, "Why can't it be done tonight?" He said, "Because all my staff is in bed." Well, I think you can see why he got shot down. If they'd already talked themselves into some kind of action that evening, they were just told that it was because people were in bed. It's a perfectly reasonable reply that Millett made, but they weren't ready to receive that. Now, the other thing that they had heard him say, this is the totality of the quote, that's what I told you up to this point. The other thing that they heard Millett say was that if the girls wanted to leave, they would be allowed to leave, and they would not be punished for coming in late. And that's right, because after midnight, they are in violation of usual rules. Now, there is a story floating around among the black students that at the 3 o'clock announcement, it was said that all the girls would be allowed to go home. And my guess is that story, well, put it this way, very few people heard the 3 o'clock announcement. This seems to be the case. However, they did hear the midnight announcement, but maybe not all of them heard that. And I think the two have been mixed together, and some black students are claiming that they were double-crossed because at 3 o'clock it was announced that the girls could go home, but that then they, even after the police were coming in, apparently, in other words, but that then they were arrested.
Yeah.
So I want to straighten that one out if you hear it somewhere else.
Where did you talk to these students? In the stadium or?
No, not at all. No, I talked to students incidentally. This is important because it's very important. I did not talk to arrested students. I talked to students who were not arrested. They were not arrested because they stayed on the second floor of the Illini Union in the program office. And in fact, they had a right to be there because we now have 24-hour access to the union for all people on student business. And as members of the Black Student Association, they remained in the Black Student Association office and therefore were not arrested. On the other hand, the students I talked to included several girls from among the original 19 girls and a boy who was responsible for some of the organizing of the other black students who joined the 19 girls on Monday morning, and that's what, on Monday evening, that's what began the whole thing.
Okay, now, just this last thing, can I quote you in the Chronicle?
In the Chronicle you may, but I would like, of course I don't want to post-censure you. I don't want to say I want to see it once you've written it, but I do really want to say that. How can we be reasonable about this? There are certain journalistic practices.
Well,
put it this way, I think you will agree that I have been more than open.
I will try to read it to you over the phone.
Okay.
Where can I reach you tomorrow?
I should be here all day. Now you're not going to mail this, though, till when?
Mail it tomorrow.
Oh, you are mailing it tomorrow.
Where could I reach you tonight, anywhere?
Probably here.
Till when?
Again. Well, if you can't get me here, I will be at the Graduate Student Association office or at home. One of those three places.
This is, phone number here is...
Okay, we'll now go over the stories that are in the News Gazette. Now let me just look at it and I can scan it and tell you what's wrong. Okay, and why don't you put this on your record too? There we go. Okay, we're now reading from the News Gazette stories, and I'll say what was wrong. Here's the first thing that bothers me. About 100 police officers moved into the union at about 3:30 a.m. to arrest the protesters after the property damage began. This makes it sound as if the property damage immediately preceded the entrance of the police, mm-hmm. and it did not. It was all over long before the police went in.
You've got that.
Okay, but I stress that you had in your paper, you see, and that maybe if you write a further story for the paper, it should be changed. No force was used by the police. This is correct. The rest of it down through here is correct. Placed in inferior housing facilities and that they were being forced to obtain loans and jobs instead of being offered scholarship aid. This is right, but the background isn't given, so it makes it look as if they were demanding things that the ordinary students don't get, you see. Mm-hmm. The tone is, the facts are correct, but the tone is misleading.
That's probably university.
Now it's, I agree it is. I'm not laying blame here, Diane. I'm saying what's the truth. The protest began at about 7 p.m. in the lounges. This is not correct. The protest began at 7 in the ISR, and it moved to the union outside on the porch and in the rain, and then it came in the...
When did it move to the union?
About 8, like my evidence is.
Okay.
And then it rained, and then they moved in the union. And that's important because no sit-in was ever planned. It just happened. No one ever went to the union to sit in. Okay. The rest of it here seems to be generally correct. 1 a.m. Okay, now this is interesting. At about 1 a.m., the University Police in Champaign and Urbana City Police called in their off-duty officers and the area around the Union Building was sealed off. I suspect that that's true, and I suspect it's because that's when the property damage was. You see. But however, it's not true that they sealed off the union so people couldn't get in and out because I walked in without any trouble at all.
Yes.
And I know people got in and out all during that time. So this is just generally wrong.
Okay.
The rest of it seems to be okay.
Okay, now.
All right, that's that one. Now let's look at this one. Pelderson calls police only with greatest reluctance. Okay. This is based on Pelderson's statement, apparently, of Tuesday morning statement, and this is your afternoon paper, right?
His morning statement and press conference.
I don't think you can question much there. No, except that he didn't know all the facts by that time, and I might object to, I mean, I can't object to your reporting, but I might object to what he said. The business about the 24 vacancies is correct. They completely rejected because they refused to accept white roommates is also correct. But let me tell you that that girl, the only thing that that girl I talked to saw, and the only thing in her mind was that they, some of these vacancies were in the same place. Mm-hmm. So it's not really accurate for Doble to say that they refused to accept it because of the white roommates. That was a factor, but it wasn't the only one. Mm-hmm. And the one that was uppermost in this girl's mind was that it was the same lousy dorm.
Even though the room may have been a lot better.
Yeah, I'm sure she might have given in. The point is she might have given in on the white roommate thing. I don't know how serious they were about
they
demanding...
Did they offer to let the girls see the rooms?
I don't know about that. I doubt that the girls even would have accepted such an offer. Because what the girls told me one very important thing, which was that if all 19 were not happy, then they were all going to reject it.
Yeah.
And the point is 9 from 24 is 15. And Doble says that 9 of the spaces, 9 of the 24 vacancies, indeed were back in those same dorms that the girls had objected to. So that meant that even discounting the white roommates, they had previously decided they would reject anything that didn't satisfy them. And we have reason to believe that without the white roommate factor at all, they would have been dissatisfied.
Yeah.
Now, it's too bad that somebody didn't realize that you couldn't give them rooms in that dorm. I think that was, I don't know why. Well, I don't doubt Doble did his best, but I think he should have known when he went in there that wouldn't work. Yeah, I mean, look, put it this way. From the point of view of obvious fairness, Doble went out of his way to be reasonable. In fact, he went far out of his way. But still, he should have known that this wouldn't be acceptable. I'm sure he tried to explain it away. I'm sure Doble did the very best the poor man could have done. This is certainly in the misunderstanding category. But it is the racial overtones here about, you know, the white roommates I object to because I don't think that's the whole story.
Yeah.
It certainly includes the type of dorm and the place that was certainly what was upmost in this girl's mind.
Okay,
I think the rest of it looks accurate. No comment by the black students, that is correct. Then they had a release. All right, school status of the arrest check, okay. All right, this is mostly detail now. Johnson warns local blacks will stay with UI brothers. All right, this is whatever Johnson said he's entitled to say. That was Wednesday, I have to read that one myself sometime. Okay.
This is pretty, I don't think we do much there either.
Nor
today's.
Good, that's the kind of thing that...
You might want to check today's. Have you seen the university release for today?
I don't believe I have, no.
Oh boy, I tore it off a little short.
Oh, okay, yeah. Oh, yes, the Senate Discipline Committee, I knew what they were going to say, and, yes, I know this. This is just a factual report, good. It was that first story, the headline stories that were, I was most worried about.
Yeah, well, those were where they didn't have the information.
Yeah.
Now, what can I say about you? Say that you have worked with the program?
No, that's not even true. Just say that I raised money for the program in the spring, that I have an intense interest in the, in both the University of Illinois and in this particular program at the University of Illinois.
Okay.
I think that's fair.
Yeah.
This is still at the same time that Diana talked to me. I'm just continuing now that she's left. I think I'll continue to go over the statement that we released at 8 o'clock in the morning Tuesday after this whole thing happened and correct it or include things that were not included in the original writing. The second paragraph of this statement mentions the meeting of Housing Division officials with the students in ISR at 7 Monday evening. It says that the outcome was that the Housing Division said nothing could be done. This is not accurate. The girl that I interviewed at that time, I think I've already got this in the stuff with Diana, said that she was offered some spaces. Now, these girls were being very good. There were actually four of them or five of them sitting there, and one of them would talk, and the others would correct her when she went wrong. And it was obvious that wishful thinking, that kind of whitewashing one's own role in it was going on, but they were keeping each other honest and doing a beautiful job of it. One of them was glossing over what the Housing Division said. The other one demanded that she correct it and be accurate. And then a third said, well, now, what really happened was they offered us some rooms, okay. But she said they were the same rooms. And I said, what do you mean by the same rooms? And she said, well, they were the ones that we, you know, were already bad. And then they went back into a detailing of how the plaster was falling and so on and so forth. their perception, in other words, the consensus, I'm not sure about it, I don't know if I can say the consensus, but at least one of those girls, and the others seemed to agree that this was not a distortion, or anyway, they let her get away with it. One of the girls felt her perception of the Housing Division offer was that it was a whitewash, that they were being offered the same rooms they were already in. And I couldn't really believe that, and so I questioned her on that point and said, are you really serious? They were offering you the same rooms again? And she says, yes, with some determination. Of course, okay, so much for the second paragraph. Then now in here somewhere, and it did not get into this report, one of the boys, in fact, I wish I had original drafts. Let me go looking for those. One of the boys sitting there said that he had had something to do with calling his friends and getting them out and to be there. This is now 7 o'clock Monday evening. And that when the girls announced, I tried to get the next thing very straight, and they claimed that after this meeting, one of the girls who had been at the meeting came out and announced to the assembled crowd that nothing had come of it, or something to that effect. I don't know what her announcement was, but anyway, they were told of the outcome by this girl. I don't know anything of the content of her statement. In any event, this fellow felt that at that point the crowd was ready to break up and, in fact, was breaking up. And he apparently was not there for the next few minutes and said that he helped some girl move her stuff. Now, that's worth checking into, because apparently the only girls who could be moving stuff at this point, since it's now Monday night, would be ones who had been sitting in. And so this is a reminder to myself to go checking into that and see if any of the girls did indeed accept Housing Division offers on Monday night. They claim that they had a solidarity pact, and that if they all weren't satisfied, if not every one of them was satisfied, then they all weren't satisfied and they wouldn't accept anything. But this kid seemed to indicate that he was helping somebody move. Well, anyway, he wasn't there then afterwards, and the point of making this statement is that he felt that his group was about to break up at that time, but then apparently this group, as it was leaving, was met by a group of black students coming down from the union. And I have no more really eyewitness reports about the makeup of that group, except that but I think they can be got. It's just possible that the advisors, somebody sometime had better get some details on the Black Student Association meeting that took part, that was going on in the union at roughly the same time that this meeting with Housing Division representatives was going on down in ISR, because it will be important to know to what degree students from the North End came into that meeting. And now let me think here. Somebody's told me something about this. Well, I can't remember now who it was.
But someone, and yesterday, as a matter of fact, which would be Thursday, told me that this meeting was packed with North End people, that BSA members were kept out. North End people came in, in fact, that there was somebody at the door guarding it, and that the North End element apparently had control from the beginning. I don't know about that. In any event, I also don't really have any good detailed information from here until 11, but I will repeat the rumors I've heard and then we'll track them down later. I want to have a complete set of rumors so we can track down a complete set. Apparently there was one act of violence at 8:40. This is after the crowd moved indoors. This apparently was an unprovoked attack by 5 to 6 black people upon 3 white people who were walking across the porch of the Union. And that did not get reported in this handout. In fact, this reported no violence, as far as I know, to individuals, because I had no evidence, no information about that at that time. I'll put it this way. I had heard that there had been somebody roughed up, but I certainly had no one who could tell me anything about it, and this did not seem central. I think I'm beginning to think now it is more important, and I do certainly want it in the final record. Obviously, it's much more important when you get to the attacks at round one. Now, this incident, I got information from the girl from the Courier. What's her name? Well, it doesn't matter. We know who that is, I assume. Anyway, she told me at noon that one of her colleagues was hiding behind a bush and saw the attack at 1 o'clock, and that it consisted yes, I'll tell you the whole story. Joe Williams came out and found some white guys on the back porch, and I suspect it was Joe, incidentally, who was going around telling white people they better leave. But apparently Joe came to the back porch and found some white kids out there, and he said, "What are you doing?" And they said, "Well, we're kind of having a counter demonstration." Now, the word counter could be, this is, of course, now second hand, so the word counter, well, it's third hand when you count me. The word counter might not have been there. I think they might have possibly said sympathy demonstration, particularly considering the makeup of this group. Anyway, they were out there. Well, while Joe said that, she said that was very humorous. Joe chuckled and they chuckled, and Joe went back inside. But apparently some other black lurking in the background heard this and went inside and collected some more and came out. And she said that she saw the one kid really hit over the head viciously with a chair, with a metal chair. And I assume that's one of the Union metal chairs that sits on the porch out there all the time. That's a secondary eyewitness. There is an eyewitness. He is a reporter for the Courier to this particular bit of violence. There also is a story about a third act of violence, and I've never tracked that one down. In fact, the one at 8:40, I'm not sure how vicious that was, whether people got slugged, what happened. Okay, that fills that one in. The Dean Millett, I think I've given in the rest of the tape with Diana the complete Dean Millett thing as seen by at least one student. The rest of this would appear to be fairly accurate, except that I say that a chandelier and furnishings were seriously damaged, and I'm not now sure that I would even use the word seriously. I don't know if I've mentioned in this tape with Diana, but the university is having some difficulty in estimating the value of the things that were broken, and one of their hang-ups is that they don't know how valuable things like portraits of old presidents are. And as far as I'm concerned, they are valueless, and I think it was very poor handling not to give out some kind of damage estimate at a fairly early hour. I think, finally, Bernal Heinecke of the Daily News is apparently the only man in town with any kind of sense, and he simply asked what was broken, and they detailed it for him, and his account, I think, is probably gives the best perspective on the damage of all the reporting by all the newspapers. And that's a point for Dan Baltz's article, I suppose. Okay. Now, the rhetoric that got read into this was, of course, something I couldn't do anything about. One of the prices I paid for keeping more extreme statements out of this statement was that I had to put in something about the phone call with Bruce Morrison and the Chancellor, and the rhetoric about what, and with Dean Millett. And I'm sure that they're accurate. Incidentally, also for the record, there was a hot debate in that office, 299 Line Union, that morning over whether or not to include Dean Millett's statement, but the hotter debate was whether or not, and whether or not to include Dean's, let me see, did we put that in at all? Yes. I was forced to eliminate. Yes, let me read this, and then you'll see what I'm talking about. The crowd responded, this is Dean Millett's, we have a description in this handout at 8 a.m. of what Dean Millett said to the crowd from the point of view of this one student. Now let me explain here. I got this statement together by interviewing intensively for an hour and a half the six black students that I could find on the second floor of the Line Union. Now, I'm saying six. That's not really right. There were probably 15 of them all together who wandered in, wandered out during my interviewing. I interviewed them for a long time. Then I went back to the GSA office where white students were assembling. White students mostly, well, you know, the usual, Bob Solomon, Vic Berkey, Morrison was there. I think by this time Mel Reif had gotten in. I think, I was there. Bob Solomon was there. I think Barb Solomon was there too. No, I don't think she was. I guess I met her later in the morning in the union. There was the fellow who is in charge of Focus, which will have a new name, people like that. Anyway, we were in the, there must have been, 20 people in the room, be my guess. Oh, yeah, Michael Rossman showed up somewhat later, but he wasn't there at this point. Anyway, they were planning strategy, and they thought maybe we'd have a second sit-in in the union, and that was rejected because we decided, no, I should say we, because I had no part in this discussion. I was simply an observer. I'm not exonerating myself here, you know, for anybody else who ever listens to this tape, but my point is I wasn't in favor of such a thing, but I did take an active role later in some other things. I just felt it smart for me to keep shut at this point because I have a reputation in this group as being an administration stooge, and I simply didn't want to reinforce anybody's misapprehension of that nature. Anyway, I said, I think, if you think about it, that there isn't going to be any decent press coverage of this, and if you want to do anything, people have got to know what happened. And so independent of what action you choose to take, you better have a story. So I said, they said, well, that's a good idea. What are we going to do about that? And I said, well, we have some black students over there who can give us background. And then, of course, some of you were here all night, and you can give us some background, too. So I said, I think we should interview the black kids and begin to put this thing together. And so everybody kind of stood there. And I said, not only that, but I volunteer. So with some discussion, they went and let me do that. Incidentally, during this whole meeting, I think this is a vignette on Racist America, although obviously the thing had been entirely black all night, there was no decision to bring the black kids remaining into this meeting. They began the meeting without even inviting the black kids who were there in the union in. And I saw black kids out in the hall kind of looking in our room, you know, as if to say, what's that all about? And I asked if it would be okay if we brought some black students in, and then everybody was a little bit embarrassed, I think, as they should have been, and said, by all means. A little later, however, in the discussion of whether or not, yes, here's the point. I'm getting ahead of my story, but I think that I want to work on this black-white thing for a moment, that when we were reading back my draft, and there were discussion about whether or not we should eliminate certain lines and add certain lines out of the kids' statement, I said, I think we ought to consult the kids. And I was told by people there that this wasn't they had nothing to say about it now that they'd given their statements. This was a white thing that was going out. And in fact, it's signed by all whites. I don't think we have any non-white in the signatures. Let me look. The signatures, incidentally, of course, tell us who was there. Marion Edwards was there all night. This is Teddy. She says she's from the Turk's Head Review. That's amusing. And Teddy was over in our house at the time that she was doing her laundry around the corner, and we were playing music in my living room when we first got word of this whole thing. Steve Schmidt was there, too. Jim Cornub came in later. Cooper was there from Student Senate at the early decisions. And Brady. Okay, that gets everybody, I guess. Now, I'm listing these people, incidentally, so that the CIA will know who we were. where was I? I'll find out. I'll be very clever. I'll stop it and go back and play it. Okay, here we go again. I better get this up loud enough so it records. Okay. I was telling a little bit, I guess, when I went back and looked, I don't know what the hell I was talking about anyway. The digressions that I'm capable of are amazing, including this one. I guess I was trying to say how this statement got to be written, and I was going over saying how it had to be altered. So let me continue to tell how it was written. Well, I went out and talked to the kids for, as I say, about an hour, and I put together everything that they had to say. And that is everything up to the point where we have the two phone calls. Where we have the two phone calls that Morrison reports. And I inserted those, and then the busts came at the end. So actually, I guess the first 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 paragraphs of this were basically unaltered from what the students told me. The discussions, however, that followed my drafting were what I wanted to get to, and now I'm there. The first thing was that Dean Millett's exchange with the crowd as seen by the student was edited. And I really fought for this one and lost. I think this is amusing. As you recall from what we have in Diana's section of the tape, what the interchange was as follows. He asked which students were dissatisfied. The crowd responded that if one student was being shortchanged, they all were. They said he would have to deal with them all. He said that the situation was being worked on. He refused, upon questioning, to promise anything. He said his staff was all in bed. Nothing could be done immediately. Now, that is the way it got written up. The direct quotes from the kids, I think I have under Diana's, but I'll include them again so you can see how I was forced to change this. I think basically that's as I wrote it up. I didn't want to do any quoting. I don't know why, now that I think about it. Except that there was some sensitivity by those black kids that they not be identified. I think they felt that that they would be seen as stooges and so on by the kids who had been arrested, and so there was some nervousness about telling me anything. And I got them over that by assuring them that I would not in any way quote them or even call undue attention to the fact that there were blacks still left in the union after the arrests. Okay, but the exchange, as you'll recall, was that Millett was asked questions and he answered them, so every one of these statements was told me in the form of a question and answer. And the last thing was, the only thing that the kids mentioned is that Dean Millett had made a statement that girls could go home, and the group assembled made me edit that out, and I said I felt that colored Dean Millett's interchange with the group, and they said that it was an irrelevancy and that I should edit it out. And I pointed out to them that was the first, quotes, irrelevancy, unquotes, that they had located in my report, that if my reports are always wordy, and if they wanted to edit things, it was amusing that they wanted to edit something that I at least thought was mitigating for Millett's case. However, I lost that fight. The other fight was over Morrison's quotes of the Chancellor's remarks. And you see, all Morrison wanted the Chancellor quoted was as saying, would it be better, Morrison insisted, including this stupid quote from Millett, which frankly I think is meaningless for the majority of people who would read this thing. It's the quote, would it be better to have the Chancellor come to speak to the students, or should we act to protect union property? I don't understand that yet. I suppose what he's saying is that we have two choices here. We can take a gamble on having the Chancellor coming over and speak, or we can do what we know will protect the union property, and that is move right in with the cops. This was at 1. Apparently, Morrison held the cops off until 3, and in a way, I suppose that's his one very positive contribution to this whole thing, because if the cops had cleaned it out at 3, at 1, well, we wouldn't be in as good a position for making a case for the guilty ones having left. And I suspect they may have left immediately, and that no matter how fast the cops moved in, they wouldn't have gotten them. But it would have been less plausible to the public at large that we do not have the names of the people who did the damage if the cops had moved earlier than they did. So maybe in a way, I'm awfully glad Morrison stalled off. In fact, I suppose there would have been more blood at 1. So, all this is irrelevant, except that that's a nice thought. I never had that one before. Okay. So, I hear a phone ringing, and I better go check on that. Okay. Oh, yes, I was getting to the Chancellor's remarks. Morrison did talk to him at 3:10. The exchange seems to have been that the Chancellor said that he would under no circumstances come to speak to a crowd which had done damage and had been involved in acts of personal violence, that would be answering a mob, basically, and showing that he could be swayed by the mob. Of course, Bruce didn't see it that way at all. I think the Chancellor, in this instance, was taking the longer view of how would his actions be viewed in the state, and also the practical view of would his presence be effective. And Bruce was thinking only in terms of how his presence would be effective, and I think he was doing some wishful thinking. This is an honest difference between honest men. I don't know, maybe if the Chancellor had come, it would have been great. But the point is, the Chancellor stressed that his reason for not coming was that the crowd had done damage. This, of course, was highly frustrating and irritating to Bruce, because he had been begging Dean West and I guess then through Dean West, Dean Alpert, to try to get the Chancellor to come ever since early in the evening. Bruce claims he made his first phone call soon after 8. And that being the case, in his mind, the Chancellor had himself, in effect, caused the damage by not having come out earlier, when certainly his presence would have cooled the thing. This is Bruce's judgment. He's entitled to it. I wasn't there. I simply don't know. I don't think Bruce knew either, though. If he was up on the phone, he certainly couldn't have known a whole lot about the tone of the crowd. Well, that's a point. I ought to ask him, how much did he circulate? So when I interview Bruce, which I suppose will be a battle, I better ask that question. Now, the Chancellor is, you see, finally, well, I was trying to, I'm trying here to say what the Chancellor told Bruce, as Bruce told me. One of the things was that he wished to avoid another Columbia. He could not allow, and I suppose he meant by that, he couldn't allow buildings to be sat in for long times, that sooner or later had to be cleared, and it looked as if they weren't leaving, and that they would sit all night if he didn't clear it, and so they was going to clear it. So the choices being argued then were what was the best way to clear it, and it was obvious they weren't leaving by themselves. Bruce was arguing in favor of having the Chancellor come. The Chancellor had good reasons for not coming, and therefore sent in the cops. I this would have to be cleared. If this is the Chancellor's logic or not, I am, of course, guessing what he meant by, quotes, to avoid another Columbia. But I think, I don't know what people reading this thing thought he meant by it, and it's probably not what I just said. So my point is, this may be a distortion in our account.